As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to On The Ball, the Norwich City podcast that only pods when we're winning. So yes, the Canaries are still unbeaten in 2024, just double check my notes on that one. But the road to Hull was paved with good intentions, and if those intentions were to dig out a win with 33% possession and make the opposition manager a bit sad, then it was mission accomplished on Friday night for Norwich City. That was largely thanks to Johnny Rowe, and we will, I imagine, say some nice things about him that we can all comfort ourselves with when he goes to West Ham or somewhere in a couple of weeks. Plus, we'll ask which body part played the biggest cameo role, Fassie's thigh, Dimmy's elbow, or Gunny's rock-hard pelvis. Then there's bigger picture stuff. We've not been on for a while, so we'll have our usual chat about whether we can make the playoffs and if Wagner's the right man to get us there. The banners are back, so it can only be a matter of time before the bedsheets. And Andy's here, so we'll check if he got a Christmas card off Delia and Michael after his cheeky AGM antics. Plus, we'll welcome back Sarge, react to some huge breaking Tony Garry news, and ask our panel how much they'd be prepared to pay for a coach journey to Bristol. I'm Steve Sanders, aka at NCFC Numbers, and at this week's roundtable, we've got two panellists who I'm 100% faithful in. Had to get a traitor's reference in there. Yeah, so he's nodding approvingly. First up, a Norwich City clairvoyant who predicted we'd get 7 points over the Christmas period. Ooh, which, if you included the whole game, they did. I'm not sure we did at the time, so please don't go back and check the tape on that. It's Zoe Morgan. Zoe.
Hello,
too late for
Steve.
Happy New Year, but hello, how are you?
Hello, I'm really good and absolutely thrilled that I was sort of almost right if I add in another game to my points prediction, which everyone was aghast at when I made. So, you know, doing well. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think with these things, you're allowed to just keep going until they get the requisite number of points that you said. I think it was only a former On The Ball podcast presenter who shall remain unnamed who was aghast and then predicted 6 points.
6 points
himself.
Yes.
So it's obviously the world of difference, clearly. And I suppose technically speaking, they didn't actually even live up to those expectations. but anyway, enough. That was last year. That was last year. Don't talk about that. And our second panellist this evening. It's his first appearance of the season and he works for ITV. So pretty soon we're expecting his work to be shaping government policy. That's my bit of satire for the evening. For now, we'll just settle for influencing the hearts and minds of the On The Ball audience. It's ITV Anglia reporter and presenter Andy Ward. Andy, lovely to have you back on. How have you been?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Steve. Yeah, I've been good, thank you. Yeah, it's, as you said about the AGM, that was an interesting period. I'm sure we'll touch on that later. But not much to cheer about with Norwich City at the moment in terms of the style of play. Again, I'm sure we'll touch upon that. But in terms of work, work's great. So had the first week of January off, which was nice. But it did mean when I did eventually have to come back, it was a massive culture shock, especially when I was on the 5 o'clock shift doing Good Morning Britain. So that was a tough one. But we're back in it now.
Yeah, never take the first week of January off. That's
seems a bad idea. Yeah.
Well, I promise that Zoe and I will be be kinder to you than Teeter and Michael were. I don't think that'd be too hard. Anyway, we've got plenty of time for that. Let's talk about something altogether slightly more positive, which is 3 points. That feels like a good place to start with our headline act. Yeah, Andy's referenced the performance. We will come on to that too. But Norwich City did register a 2-1 win at Hull City on Friday night, their first win in East Yorkshire since 2007. They dug in, they battled, they rode their luck, and ultimately took home 3 points. Zoe, on our last pod, we were heralding Johnny Rowe as our Portman Road saviour, so I apologise if I'm asking you to repeat yourself, but he was at it again with another brilliant goal on Friday. I think I counted 7 touches, because obviously I am sad enough to go back and check. But they were all great, and he's got 12 for the season now. Is he Norwich City's most important player? I mean, I know we've been saying Sarah most of the season, but Rowe is really impacting on games at the moment, and did so again.
Yeah, absolutely. He seems to be the player that's capable of, I guess, rising above everything else that's going on, not getting bogged down in it. I suppose it's the sort of youthful exuberance that he's got. He's not too kind of ground down by these things happening too often in his life. So he seems to be the one person that is flying it, sort of, in despite perhaps other circumstances. You know, yeah, Sarah is obviously kind of our, I would say, best player, most accomplished player, but he is being heavily impacted by this formation that we're playing, by the way that he's being asked to play. He was on the TV before the whole game, sort of being asked about being asked to play so defensively. He had a sort of wry smile on his face. He handled it quite well, I thought, but he still even said that he'd prefer to be playing further forward. And I think at the moment, he's just being asked to do so much that it's impossible to get the best out of him. Whereas I think somehow we are potentially seeing the best of Rowe. And it's just, I've said this before about 6 million times this season already, but the real bright sort of spark in this whole season has been Johnny Rowe, and everything about him just sort of brings that sort of purity of supporting football and watching, you know, young players come through and break through and really impress people. Just a shame he had to score that wonder goal, you know, on the TV in front of everybody that might be watching in January. So, yeah, I think the importance of him cannot be understated in that the way that he can separate him or himself almost from what else is going on.
Yeah, I think they call it a trivella. Is that right? I saw it called a trivella, which I think in layman's terms just means he kicked it with the outside of his foot and it went in the goal. But yeah, I mean, it was a shame, the timing. But I sort of think, as much as we can criticise Wagner for the Sarah, and as much as Sarah seemingly would like to criticise him for the way he's being used, I guess he's kind of getting the most out of Rowe in terms of where he's playing on the pitch, in that he kind of tucks in and has the opportunity to get shots away. And obviously, it helps that he is taking his chances exceedingly well. Zoe's alluded to the fact that we have, 16 days left of the transfer window. Do you think he'll still be here at the end of it?
David Wagner or
Rowe? Could have been asking about either of them, specifically Rowe, but you can answer on behalf of both if you'd like.
Yeah, I suspect he will be. I think it would be a very big offer that would have to tempt them now to sell at this stage, because as Zoe maps out, he's such an important player, isn't he? I suspect they'll kind of keep him till the end of the season. Then if Norwich don't get promoted, as I guess we all assume they probably won't, I think that's when he will move on. But he is such an important player, isn't he? He's the one player that they turn to create things. And without him, you do wonder where they'd be. Because he's just such a creative player in this team. And it just feels like without him, I just don't know where the goals would come from. I honestly don't. It's great that Sargent's back, and that's fantastic, and I'm sure that will improve things in terms of Norwich's attacking output. But he he really is a special talent, and I think he's going to have an incredible future. I just don't think it's going to be long term at Norwich City.
Yeah, you're absolutely. I mean, the wingers have outscored the strikers this season, which is kind of surprising when you think we play two of each, and you would assume that the strikers are getting the positions to score. Let's talk about the performance then. It wasn't the prettiest win, Zoe. reference the fact we had only a third of the ball. And that's only the second time since the Man City win in 2018 that we've had as little possession and won. The other one was Watford away, which is also on a Friday night. The Sarge. I mean, I don't think there is a name for that finish, whatever that was. Semi-scorpion kick? No. No,
scorpion. Injured scorpion.
Injured. Yeah, demented scorpion. but we're now 2 points off the playoffs, so, you know, we are there or thereabouts. How do you feel about performance versus results? Because it is a debate that's raging.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Times really have changed since that Man City game, haven't they? It's not, not something I want to dwell on, really. but yeah, it's obviously, you know me, and the conversations that we usually have, obviously I'm on the playoff bandwagon. Feel like things are going to come good at any point. We're getting the results. It kind of feels a bit ungrateful, I suppose, to be moaning about the fact that we pick up 3 points with a really battling display away from home on a pitch that is all cut up and at a place that we've not won in many years, a team that are higher above us in the table. Yeah, it feels a bit sort of ridiculous to be moaning about that. And I'm trying not to, but it is also, I guess, difficult to kind of come to... I suppose it's all about... This season is all a bit about coming to terms with where we find ourselves. And I think that's what's increasingly difficult to kind of swallow, I suppose, that, you know, technically we shouldn't be setting up like that against Hull away from home. You know, as as the TV commentator said twice, I think he repeated his script, that we used to boss this league and now, you know, and now look at us, basically. Something about inconsistency that kept coming up as well. But we did. And, you know, we've got one of the biggest budgets in the league. Our squad is full of very talented, capable players. And I suppose it sticks in the throat a little bit that it doesn't feel like this team are playing to the best of their abilities. And that's what's quite difficult to come to terms with. I think, you know, with a team with, you know, lots of people have said this, but with Sarah and Rowe and Saints and Sargent and all of that kind of, and Nunez as well, all of that sort of attacking creative talent, you think, you know, back to times past of a few years ago, and what would a team playing Farkaball, this team playing Farkaball, look like, and what kind of excitement and joy would we get from that team playing in that exciting way? And I don't know, this sort of determination now to suddenly sort of shut up shop and keep things tight, I think doesn't play to any of our strengths particularly. It's not what the fans want. I don't think it's what the manager wants. I don't think it's what half the players want. It's this weird sort of state of affairs where it's sort of like, let's prove everybody wrong, but at the same time, it's not pleasing anyone. And yeah, like I say, it's sort of difficult to not be happy that we've got 3 points away from home, but the circumstances are kind of dictating that, you know, it's sort of increasingly frustrating. And you know, Sarah hasn't been, I don't think he's got a goal or an assist for 9 games. And like that, you know, when he was sort of scoring wonder goals every other game, and it, you know, that's a sort of symptom of what's going on, I think. And yeah, it's just a shame that this is the situation we're in, I think. Obviously, you know, a massive part of my attitude is we're going to get in the playoffs and it's all going to be fine. But at the same time, you know, the slight realist in me is like, God, I wish this was more exciting. And that's where I am, I think.
Yeah, I wonder if Sarah would have offered up the same wry smile if he'd been told he hadn't got 9 goals and 9 assists. Or sorry, a goal or an assist in the last 9 games before the game. Andy, I'll put a similar question to you. Will Alice, before before the pod asked the question, if Norwich scrap their way to sixth and finish in the playoffs, do we all Do we all owe Wagner an apology? Performances have looked poor for a while and we've said the good results appeared unsustainable, but they've been sustained for a long while now since the Cardiff away comeback. Will we owe Wagner an apology? Do we? I have my own thoughts about this, but I wanted to see what you thought.
I don't think we do, actually, because I think as Zoe maps out, this is a very capable squad. And I actually believe it should be towards the top six. There's some fantastic players within that squad. I mean, Zoe mapped out there. You've got six full internationals. You've got Johnny Rowe, who's a England under 21 international. And the other players are experienced Premier League players like Ashley Barnes, Jack Stacey, and Gabby Sarah, who we talked about there. And I think that squad should be capable of at least pushing for the top six. And I think it's kind of an irrelevant question because I just don't think Norwich are good enough to get in there. I just don't think that they've shown they can string that consistent run of performances and results together that will get them in the top six shake-up. And I hope I'm wrong. I know they're only 2 points off at the moment, and that's a nice position to be in. But I don't know if I've seen the evidence, performance-wise, at the very least, that they can kind of string this all together. The one thing I will say is you've got to credit Wagner in the fact that he's recognised there has been a problem and he has resolved it, defensively at least. So you can't fault him for that. He's doing the right thing to save his job, effectively, isn't he? I think he would have been under massive pressure if Adam Eder hadn't scored that goal against Cardiff to win that game. And for his sake, you can understand why he's doing it. I just think it's come at the detriment of such creative players like Sarah. And I just think it's a shame. I think when you've got a player like Sarah, who, let's be honest, I would think he's one of the top five players in the league. I don't know if anyone would disagree with that, but ability wise, he probably is. And Norwich are playing him in a position that doesn't suit him, and he's not doing anything that he's capable of producing. He's not a defensive midfielder, which is kind of where he's been asked to play at the moment. The team should be built around him, in my opinion, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to come out in semi-defence of David Wagner, I think, because I agree with a lot of the points you've made, which is we're probably not utilising our best player. In fact, we're definitely not utilising our best player in the way that we should be. And that is a frustration. It's not fantastic to watch. And there are, and we arguably have a better squad, arguably, than the league position is currently. I would have got rid of him after the Blackburn game. I think we'd had a podcast and I said at the time, I'm not really sure why he's still here. Since then, well, at that point, we were 9 points off the playoffs and we were 17th. And we're now 11th and 2 points off, as we've already said. There's only four teams that have won more games than us since that point. So since that real nadir, we have been in playoff form. As you pointed out, Andy, the defence is a lot better. Since Angus Gunn's come back in, we've conceded basically a goal a game, which is... you would think if that carries on, and that's a massive if, because I think we've earned a lot of points, we would finish in the top six. And I kind of think in some senses the squad that we've got does sort of lend itself to the way that we're playing in some senses. I think if you sign a centre-half like Shane Duffy and you have centre-halves like Ben Gibson, it's not that much of a surprise when away to another playoff-chasing team, you kind of sit deep and you rely on some attacking talent to get you a goal. Same with the likes of Ashley Barnes. And where I would say he's been quite good is adapting his style to kind of grind out results, I guess, against better sides. Honestly, I think that Southampton game... I'm really sounding like one of Delia's 80% here, aren't I? But I think that Southampton game was really... I can't really understand the reaction from a lot of the fans saying to Wagner, your football is shit, parental advisory. You say that before, don't you? and it wasn't a great watch, but Southampton was 17 unbeaten. And I think we did quite well to get a point out of the game. And I also think we did pretty well to win on Friday against a team above us in the table. And a game that we really had to win. If we'd lost that game, the season would be over. So I do concur. The style is not great and it's not always fun to watch. But this squad and this team is infinitely preferable to the one we had last season, in my opinion. I think they fight for points. I think they clearly are still behind the manager, even though not, you know, there might be some questions over could we get a better one in. In fact, there's no question another manager probably could do a better job if we got the right one. But I don't know if it's enough to sack him. And I think our form, the way it is over the last couple of months, we're not going to. So I kind of think, I hope that we get behind, everyone gets behind it on Saturday, and it doesn't turn quickly. But that's my case for the defence, and I don't know if a lot of that is just cloud cuckoo land stuff. Anyone want to come back on any of that?
I do agree with you that I think we're moving further and further away from the possibility of him being sacked. I think we do have to come to terms with the fact that it seems unlikely to happen, certainly anytime soon. And if it doesn't happen in January, then it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And I've said before, I like him and I do want him to do well. I just want to enjoy it, I think, I think that's quite important to me. I travel quite a long way to go and watch the football, and I'd rather that it was a bit, there was a spirit there that I think is possibly lacking. At the same time, I say that, I do think all of the players that do seem very united. They seem to be a unit. They seem to be playing, whether it's for each other or for him, or, you know, there doesn't seem to be huge signs of, you know, the players giving up and the players wanting him to get sacked. And that's quite, I guess, heartening to see amid so much criticism. And hopefully, you know, they can all band together and sort of teach us all a lesson in terms of what success they get. I think, it's a really difficult one to weigh up. And as someone that is instinctively incredibly positive, it does feel really weird to be quite critical about them. But I think it's just the result of 3 years of it just, there not being huge amounts to grab onto in terms of really positive things to talk about. And that it sort of gets to, I think, in the end of just wishing that something comes to life a little bit. And I don't doubt that it's there somewhere waiting to happen, but I'm not entirely sure what is going to cause it at this moment.
I think where we probably do all agree is that, in spite of everything I've said, I would also say I don't think we're going to make the playoffs with, I'm more positive than I was, because I think the front four that played against Hull have not played together all season, and Hanley is back. We've now got Gunn in goal. I think if the 11 that played on Friday can stay fit for the majority of the season, that gives us a chance. I think the rest of the squad's not strong enough. Sorry, Andy, you were gonna come in.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point from Zoe, because when you actually look back, it's been so long since Norwich fans have seen good football at Carrow Road, hasn't it? I mean, even the promotion season was behind closed doors, and I don't know. I just kind of feel. It's interesting you asked earlier about the performance versus the result. And I'm sort of leaning more towards the performances now, because I just feel so starved as a fan of watching good football at Carrow Road. And I'd kind of rather, this is just me personally thinking, personally speaking, I would just rather get behind a project in inverted commas, where we've got a young, exciting team that, okay, they're going to lose a few games, but you expect that with young players. And I know Napa wants to change that, and I think that's really good, and I think that's really positive, and that will probably take place in the summer. We've got loads of players out of contract, and they'll probably bring some fresher young players in. But I think fans could get behind that if you could see what they're trying to do. It just seems at the moment, and I get it, I completely get it with David Wagner, because he will have aspirations of getting in the playoffs, and as we touched upon earlier, he wants to keep his job. Of course he does. But is it sustainable to just wait for a moment of magic from someone like Johnny Rowe and then just hang on for dear life? And that's what they do, isn't it? That's kind of, you know, 30% possession, let Hull have all the ball, invite them on. And if you do that against Leeds, for example, they're going to get battered, I'm telling you now. So I just don't think it's a sustainable way to play in the long term. So I'd kind of rather see a progressive style of play and lose a few games and be mid-table, but have that sort of carrot dangling that, once this all clicks together, they could be a really, really good team. And we'll see that.
And I think it's a mindset thing, isn't it? Because I'm sort of happy. I think I feel like I've seen so much we've seen so much dross over the last few years that actually, oh, and away win at Hull, that's quite nice. I can be happy about that. So, but yes, I think I'm probably in the minority there. But let's talk about a little bit more about that away win. Angus Gunn did well, didn't he? we've spoken about the impact that he's had since he's come back in. I mean, you know, obviously eulogise about Johnny Rowe, but Gunn was probably equally important in that, Zoe, wasn't he? And that the save from Billy Sharp in particular he had to make it.
It was good.
Please elaborate.
it's good to have someone that does look like a goalkeeper back in goal. That's a good start.
It's in his genes.
Also, I think we're so used to now knowing what Brian Gunn looks like now that it's like you sort of think, oh, Angus doesn't look anything like Brian Gunn. And then you look at an old picture of Brian Gunn and they're almost the spitting image of each other. And it's quite... it's quite spooky how much young Angus looks like young Brian. They are very similar.
Angus's head, would you see
I think it's in the eyes. I think they've got the same eyes. So yeah.
There's not back to people losing their hair again.
Yeah, probably anyway. But anyway, back to Angus. I think he's been so good. And the sort of combination of him and Kenny, I'm still on my charge to get Kenny in central defence for the Euros for Scotland. I think that's it's got to happen. But, you know, that combination of those two, I feel like they are two very communicative people. And I feel like that's a good combination. There was also, I suppose we're going to get onto the incident of Angus.
Well, let's do it
nearly,
now.
Nearly killing someone. I thought he had killed him when it happened. I instinctively looked away from the TV because he'd sort of gone flying and I was like, oh my God. But it wasn't a foul, right? Are we all agreement?
Definitely not.
I mean, I don't think it necessarily was, I suppose it was a little bit harsh that it was a foul against the Hull player. But if it was going
to
be
a
foul, if anyone was fouling anyone there, it was him because he wasn't looking at the ball, I don't think, at that point. But absolute madness to do it in the first, to go flying in there. Angus was never going to pull out of that situation. And sort of this man half his size suddenly just sort of throws himself head first at him. I don't really know what he was expecting to happen.
Well, I wondered if they had some, if they got it in for Aaron Connolly, because Shane Duffy took him out in the first minute of the game. Yeah. And he definitely did something similar in the reverse fixture. And both times he kind of went up to him and was like, oh, you know, are you all right? And then just walked off. Yeah. But they must know each other.
International teammates.
So it's almost like they had a sweepstake going of who could do the challenge to force him off the pitch.
I feel like he did a lot of moaning in the game at Carrow Road when he came on. I feel like, I don't know if there's anything in that. I mean, Hull in general, two games of a lot of moaning going on.
And a lot of diving as well.
I don't know what has happened to Liam Rossini since he stopped being a TV pundit, because he was so brilliant and so friendly and charming and all of these things when he was a TV pundit. And he seems to have developed, one, he can't look at a camera directly, just looks at the floor intently the entire time. And the rest of the time seems to spend just moaning about stuff that's going on. And it seems so at odds to the way he was when he was, absolutely loving life when Norwich City were winning the championship in 1819. He's a very different manager to what I think I would have expected. And his team seemed to sort of be reflecting some of those sort of slightly moany attitudes on the pitch, I think.
Well, I really enjoyed him in the post-match interview saying how happy he was with everything and the performance and everything, while clearly looking highly frustrated, like the most frustrated he could possibly be, and just shaking his head like he couldn't even keep the frustration in. But no, I'm really happy with this. I'm really happy with this performance. that was brilliant. And of course, the other moment that he was well, one of a few moments that he was upset about anyway, was the stray elbow of Dimi, Andy. I mean, yeah. Sky were adamant that they didn't want to see it, which was ironic as they showed it about five times before we got to see the goal at halftime from numerous different angles. Lucky to stay on, in your opinion?
Very lucky. I can't believe he didn't get sent off for that. I've got to be honest. Because he even has a little look, doesn't he, before he sort of makes contact with Louis Coyle. And I don't know if you saw after the game, Louis Coyle had this massive egg on his head. So, Dimi got in good and proper there. A silly thing to do, to be honest. I mean, that it just shows you how things could have turned out differently. Because if he's sent off there, I think that came just before the road goal as well, didn't it?
So, yeah,
3 minutes before.
You know, Norwich would have been down to 10 men. You know, Roe might not have scored that goal and it could have been so different. But they do just have this little bits of indiscipline that just sneak in every now and then, don't they? Don't know why, but I think he was very, very fortunate not to be sent off for that.
Well, you're absolutely right, because since we've last done a pod, we've had the science red card at West Brom, obviously. Ashley Barnes somehow didn't get sent off.
How did he get away with that?
And, you know, another string to David Wagner's bow, just taking players off before they get sent off, and Dimi getting to add to his collection of being hooked at halftime. That was nice to see. Also, I mean, he definitely would have writhed around the floor if he'd been on the receiving end of it. So
I did wonder whether he was trying to recruit another member of his like masked gang that he someone else to join him in his to get a superhero gang wearing masks during the game.
Yeah, a team of Zorros. I suppose we should probably mention that, a nice moment for Onel, a nice moment for Christian Fasnacht. Good finish, actually, I thought, for that second goal. Looked kind of lucky, but I think he meant to sort of guide it in that way, didn't he? He's got a bit of a knack for scoring, kind of getting those positions and scoring. Anything else from the Hull game or that anyone? I mean, it was now 3 days ago. So, if not, then let's move it on to things we are not going to talk about, and let's not talk about the transfer window. I guess it's swung open. It's about as far ajar as it could possibly be at the moment. Seems about halfway through January. The devastating news is that we have lost Tony Gary Springett for the rest of the season on loan to Northampton. Zoe, immediate thoughts? Do you want to read out a eulogy? How do you feel?
Still coming to terms with it, I think. Hopefully we can still track his progress on the podcast while he still is a Norwich City player. I think he would want that as a friend of the podcast.
Well, we can ask him, obviously, because we're in regular touch with him. He's not gone far anyway. He's only gone to Northampton. That feels about right, I think. It'll be interesting to see how he gets on there. Can he hack it at that level and therefore get a chance? You know, a little bit like Abu Kamara's, you know, kind of doing for Portsmouth. Other disappearees. Huang has gone back to Forest. I don't think we need to speculate too hard on the reasons why. Andy, will they miss Huang? I mean, he'll always have that goal at Watford, right?
Yeah, and what a goal it was, by the way.
What a goal it was.
Incredible, wasn't it? Yeah, no, it's interesting because he was sort of showing, it was just starting to show some signs of potential, wasn't he? And actually, I was quite impressed with him towards the end of his loan spell. But anyway, he's got this mystery hamstring injury that will at some point clear up, I think, over the next 6 weeks. but he, as I said, he was starting to show what he's all about. And I think what you've got to remember with him is that he's not played for so long, has he? He had like a whole year out before that. But he's clearly not a mug, is he? He's got a lot of caps for South Korea. Whether he'll get any more, I don't know. But that remains to be seen. But I don't think Norwich are going to miss him hugely, are they? Because Sargent coming back, as we touched upon earlier, is a huge plus, isn't it? And you couldn't really see a scenario where he's going to get ahead of Sargent in the team. And obviously, Ida is the best Championship sub, is that what David Wagner christened him? So you got him coming off the bench. So then you're looking for where's Huang going to fit in there, and he probably doesn't. So I think Norwich can limp on until the end of the season with just those options, I would think.
Although, given that we blamed our complete capitulation at Watford on Hwang's sudden disappearance with injury, I mean, how are the players going to cope with his sudden exit back to Nottingham Forest? Are we going to be able to get over it?
I mean, normally, well, what usually happens when players disappear with a mystery hamstring injury is they rock up at Middlesbrough, isn't the case. So coming to a northeast club near you soon, I guess.
Just on Tony Springett, I can still track his progress because we do cover Northampton Town. So that's exciting for me. He's not really gone in my eyes. So I'll keep you posted, Zoe.
The Tony Gary correspondent for the Michael Bailey podcast.
Yeah, of course,
absolutely.
Yeah. Please, could you be?
It's niche, but we'll make it happen.
Yeah, we'd like to see full segments on ITV Anglia News, please, Andy, if that's okay. Yeah, we will be checking back in then with Andy before the end of the season. We'll have to. I mean, in terms of players coming in, do we want anyone? Do we expect anyone? I mean, let's take a yes. We'd love a defensive midfielder as red, and also that's not going to happen. Also as red, but that aside, is there anything that we would like? Napa's suggested that we could see a new face. Well, I feel like he has, in that he's not Stuart Webber. I don't think we'll see anyone, but does anybody else?
No. The defensive midfielder is the position they need, though, isn't it? It really is, because I feel like that could unlock, we touched on it earlier, that could unlock Sarah, that could unlock Nunez, and that does seem the key position to me.
I read today that Man City are asking for £7 million just to take Calvin Phillips on loan, so I feel that probably rules us out of the running for Calvin Phillips, which is a shame. It would be ideal.
It really would, yeah.
I think we could scrape him.
Yeah, we could do that.
Give him a game.
Yeah.
Getting ready for the Euros. It'll be fine.
Yeah, it's win-win.
But it's so interesting because we've talked about that position so often, haven't we? I mean, literally seasons, and they've never addressed it. Mm. And it's just quite an interesting point that hasn't been addressed. But they're worth their weight in gold. They're almost like strikers now, aren't they? They're so rare that you get a good one. I mean, obviously Norwich had Skip, but... And Tetti, it makes you realise how good Tetti was in some respects doesn't it?
Yeah, starting to wonder if it's just written in his contract to make him look better. You know, we won't sign a defence midfielder for at least 5 years after you go. In fact, we'll hire a manager who doesn't seem to believe in them, doesn't realise they exist. Well, for Gabby Sarah's sake, if nobody else's, and all of ours, let's hope we get one, but... I think we could be waiting another 6 months at least. I mean, just to round off, Archie Mayer has gone to Morecambe on loan and Emmanuel Adeboyega has gone to Walsall on loan. But we will see what else happens for the rest of January. In terms of players coming back, we have talked about Sargent. We have talked about Hanley. Ashley Barnes is still here, despite the rumours that he'd been sacked in the changing rooms after the Millwall game. It was totally bizarre. And then, oh, he's starting against Bristol Rovers. Okay, maybe he has got a role to play still. But yeah,
he was really good at Hull. I have to say, I thought he had a really good game.
Yeah,
he really did lead from the front there.
Yeah, I thought he was great. And do we want to say any more positive about Ashley Barnes just to annoy Dan? Or
he was exactly what I think we might have hoped we were getting. In that whole game, and you know, without any of the other context, that sort of attitude is exactly what we needed a bit of last season. So yeah, ignore every other factor of the entire season and the rest of the squad. Excellent.
Well, I think it's fair to say he's been good when I know Sargent was pretty peripheral on Friday, but when he's played with Sargent, he has looked good. Mm-hmm. And yeah, let's ignore other bits of the season. Also, I just like that celebration where he just puts on a pair of glasses.
Upside down glass. Bit Dennis Taylor, isn't it?
Yeah. Did Dele Alli do something along those lines? I feel like
Who?
He did a
celebration.
Maybe it's our next defensive midfielder. That's what we're
looking at.
We can turn him into one. Well, we'll talking of signings and lack of money. That brings us on to Delia and Michael. The I mean, they're not going to let this go. The Ipswich Town, Carlsberg, Cairngate. Well, we're not going to let this go either because it did happen a week or two ago. But they came out with a statement that they would like to thank all the Ipswich Town supporters who are still sending messages of support and even flowers after the event to apologise for what took place at the Derby match. He says there's a but coming. There has been a very good relationship with Ipswich Town during our tenure of 28 years. And we are saddened that we are yet to receive a public apology. I don't know if I should bring up a question that is just, do we care? But do we care? Is it like, you know, read the room, guys? What do you think, Zoe?
I'd like to know how many people have sent them flowers. I think it would probably be, you know, writing a card, maybe a letter. I can just about understand, but I'm not sure it would come too high up my list to send the owner of biggest rivals football club a bunch of flowers because beer can landed on their car. Anyway, I think, like, it's weird that Ipswich didn't apologise for it. Like, it is weird and bad form and, yeah, just a bit odd. So I can kind of see why it would still be narking them because, I think there's a certain, I think we can guess about what Delia and Michael like, but there's a certain amount of proper behaviour that I think is expected, and I think this goes against it a little bit. And I imagine it was quite a shock when it happened, and not very nice for them, because it's not just that happening in isolation, but I suppose there's a worry that what is going to happen next, like, you've still got the rest of that journey to go and you've got to leave the ground as well, and I think there's, you know, it can shake you up a little bit, and they are old, as we know. So a bit, yeah, I've got a bit of sympathy for them there. At the same time, do you need to do that in public? Could you just drop a note to Ipswich saying it's a bit weird that you haven't apologised? It would be really nice if you did. There are bigger fish to fry at the moment, I think. Like, if it was completely in a different season where different things were happening, I think we'd all have thrown our might behind them in support of them. But it's not quite happened like that, so it just feels a bit it's just all a bit odd, I suppose. But in terms of why they're upset about it, I do get it. You know, it's not the biggest thing to have ever happened, but I can get why they were upset by it.
Yeah, and for the record, this pod does not advocate throwing cans at octogenarians, even cans of Carlsberg, you know, which I was quite impressed at how it balanced on the car, though. I don't know if that was deliberate. It was very impressive.
It's magnetic Carlsberg in some way.
Well, that's worth keeping hold of then. I mean, you mentioned narking Delia and Michael. We've got the perfect person to turn to, as it happens. And I mean, again, this is going back even further, but obviously you had an interesting exchange with them at the AGM in November, I think it was. Worth going back and seeking if anybody hasn't watched it. They are really quite short with your line of questioning, I think, which I thought was actually very good, very fair. You held them to account nicely. But a difficult situation for you to be in. I mean, did it feel uncomfortable for you at the time?
It felt, the whole evening felt tense, if I'm being honest. Even from the first bit where the fans are asking the questions. I think there was a couple of questions there that I won't divulge what they were, but they sort of got their backs up to that, and I think they kind of carried that into the interviews with the press as well. So I think they were already a little bit touchy about what was said in that forum. And it did feel quite tense, I have to admit. You know, you start with it, you sort of ease them in, and then you've got to get to the crux of the questions that you know are going to be controversial. And I still stand by what I asked, because we don't know if Ben Napper was thinking of sacking David Wagner. I suspect he probably wasn't. But it did kind of feel like Delia making that phone call, which, as we all know, she's lovely. She's a really good owner in that respect. And I think all of us have got huge respect for her. And it would have been done with the best intentions. But as a new guy into that job, who's never done that before, it kind of made his mind up for him, I thought. So I just thought it was worth asking the question. And as you said, she didn't take too kindly to it, and neither did Michael. But, you know, that's their prerogative. That's their opinion, and they're completely entitled to do that. And as I said, I've got huge respect for them. That won't ever change. But it was a tricky situation in that respect as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you talk about easing them in. I think the answer to your first question was about three words. And at that point, I thought, if I was in your shoes, I probably would have crumbled and gone, oh, well, I won't ask the really difficult ones then, but you stuck to your guns. And that's probably why, one of the reasons why you are a respected local reporter and I'm not. I just sit here and moan about things on a podcast. But speaking of moaning about things, I think I've found the way that we're going to raise that £7 million for Calvin Phillips. It's coach travel, guys. 54 pounds to go to Bristol, anyone?
It's a lot of money, isn't it?
If they told you it was for Calvin Phillips, would you get on that bus?
I'd probably pay the money and not get on the bus, to be honest. I think
we could play it as a defensive midfielder, couldn't we? Literally park the bus.
That might be what we do anyway, in a metaphorical sense. And of course, a £1 discount for the season ticket holders, which I remember when £1, you know, we used to do kids for a quid. £1 was enough to get you literally in the ground. Also the ticket for the game, if you're under 14, is £6. So the travel would be 9 times the cost of the game. I mean, we're laughing about it. It's just utterly ludicrous, especially in, like, I don't know, cost of living crisis and all that. You know, it's madness. That's just my opinion anyway. I'm sure there are perfectly good reasons for it. There aren't. Anyway, have we got any other things we're not going to talk about? Or the pensive look suggests that if anything comes up, we've still got Kenny Other Business, which is basically the same kind of thing, but slightly later on. Let's pretend like this was a natural segue from talking about Bristol Rovers travel to talking about the actual Bristol Rovers game. Here we go.
This is almost fantasy football.
Yep, those lucky Club Cabbage ticket holders will be making the trip west on Wednesday with the prize/punishment of a win, meaning we get to dust off the old Jeremy Goss at the old Cop VT as we'll be off to Anfield to play Liverpool on Sunday the 28th of January. Andy, how much would you like that game? How much would you like to win on Wednesday? I'm asking that question. I mean, it seems like the most basic question to ask a Norwich City fan on a football podcast, but I don't know how fussed I am, if I'm honest.
You want to win every game, don't you?
Yeah, you do, of course you do.
If you're going to lose any, that's not a bad one, I think, because, I don't know, the thought of playing Anfield, going to Anfield, Liverpool, top of the Premier League, it doesn't fill me with a lot of joy, if I'm being honest. It's not a happy hunting ground, isn't it? I suspect it wouldn't be this time. And it kind of feels like, I just think Bristol Rovers would enjoy it more, don't you? Their fans haven't been to these sort of grounds in a while. And it would feel like a chore to Norwich. And I think it would be an unbelievable thing for Bristol Rovers to do. So we talked about it earlier, but Norwich have to focus on trying to make those playoffs. Whether they're good enough to get in them, I suspect they're not, but we'll see. And that has to be the focus. So you feel for those fans that are going to fork out 54 quid or 53. It might be 53 for the season to travel to Bristol and watch their team lose. But would it be the worst thing in the world? I don't think it would, because there's not a cat in hell's chance that they can win at Anfield. I just can't see it.
No.
So, I don't think it's a bad thing.
I'm the same as you. I sort of feel like just the reaction from both sets of fans, it's like, it feels like it would be nice for Bristol Rovers. I mean, what will probably happen is, you know, Chris Martin will end up kicking our centre halves to bits and we'll be furious with them and then completely, you know, begrudging of them getting the tie. But we went out to Liverpool a couple of years ago, didn't we, at Anfield? And I'm going to say we'll be outsiders for that one, should the tie occur. Zoe, I guess the pack will probably be shuffled for that one. So who's going to get an opportunity on Wednesday, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Andy touched on it there in terms of it would, like, you feel for the supporters if we didn't win, but would it be a nice thing for them if we didn't win, but we'd played the kids and something, you know, they'd done their best and, you know, there was something to take back from, you know, some good breakthrough or standout performances from some of the fringe players. Yeah. That's kind of best case scenario for me to avoid the inevitable 5-goal plus at Anfield. Yeah, we've got too much scar tissue there, I think, for anybody to be remotely enticed by that fixture, I think. Yeah, I think we've got to be focusing on West Brom and Leeds. So as much as they can change the team, the better. I mean, for the home leg, he made sure Gunn and Kenny and Sarah were not involved, and I think that I think that probably needs to happen again. Like, what is the benefit of, you know, Sarah's playing all of these games and starting all of these games? Like, don't make him get on whatever mode of transport they get on. And what if the pitch is frozen as well? Like, we're having a cold snap. What if they get all the way there?
I know. Could happen. We, you know, it's like that. What's that? The Walsall game, was it, where they had
I went to that.
Yeah. Did you go to that one?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was trying to go, but yeah, got there, pulled into the car park. The steward went, "It's off." It was like, oh. But they did let us go and have a look at the pitch and look at the sort of big braziers with the like kindling all over the pitch, trying to melt it. I think they wanted to prove to us that they were definitely trying to get it on.
Well, wasn't that the one that Paul Lambert basically wanted to be off? And I just imagine him like pulling out, like, the, you know, turning off the heaters at the wall and stuff to make sure it didn't happen. I think that was in the middle of congested fixtures or something.
It was like December the 28th or something. It's just sort of tricky period. So, yeah, good fun. It's good.
Did you stick around in Walsall for a nice Christmas day out?
Stared at the pitch and then got in the car and drove home again.
Well, yeah, at least you can say you've been.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I hope nobody's listening to this on the coach to Bristol, because I feel like we've laughed at you for shelling out all that money.
That's,
and now we're saying
we
hope that we lose. It is, the dedication is admirable, and I don't hope we lose. I hope it's a 4-3 win and we come from behind and it's a thriller. So that's what we really want, but also let's rest all the star players. And then, yes, to take it back to obviously the much, much, much more important league game against West Brom at Carrow Road on Saturday. Steve Bruce versus Dean Smith last season, in what was, surprisingly, with those two managers, a really turgid game. So hopefully this one will be better. We'll be back before Leeds, but that one has now been moved to the 24th of January, which is the following Wednesday. But to look at the West Brom game, Andy, because of the red card in the Boxing Day game for Science that we talked about, we didn't really get a proper chance to see these two teams head to head. West Brom have lost three of the last four away from home, so they're not in as good a form as I thought. How do you see this one going? I mean, it is quite an important one, I guess.
It is, isn't it? I mean, Norwich have got to be looking to win those sort of games.
Yeah,
they need a scalp, don't they? I think they need a notable scalp, and West Brom might be one of them. I think they're a team that we probably would expect to be in the playoffs at the end of the season. I would have thought it kind of feels like sixth place is the one up for grabs.
Yeah,
and maybe West Brom are just going to be above that. You can't see them getting into third or fourth, but fifth place looks pretty sewn up, unless they go on a terrible run of form. But they're decent, aren't they? I mean, Corberan's a very good coach.
Mm.
They're a very well coached team, and with that game on Boxing Day, I mean, I know Signs were sent off, but West Brom were dominant at that stage, weren't they? Let's be honest. So whether that hugely affected the outcome, I don't know. But it is hard to judge, isn't it? Because you don't know how it would have panned out with 11 against 11, but they were the better team on that day. But obviously Norwich are at home, and they have to try and turn this home form around and start beating teams like this at Carrow Road, because that's the only way they're going to get in the playoffs. They need to win games like this, and it's not impossible, is it? I mean, they're not Real Madrid, they're West Brom, and it's a game that they can win, and with Sargent back, with Barnes and that system that we talked about earlier, if we can just free up Sarah to create some stuff, I don't see why Norwich can't win that game. No.
What do you think, Zoe? No injury issues other than Hanley. Are we in scalp, the big scalp of West Brom?
5-0 minimum, I'd say. I I think we do need to. I think if West Brom win, they're 10 points ahead of us, which feels like too many at this stage. So we do really need to win it. And I think, sort of harking back to my despair from earlier, I think one of the disappointing things over the last few years has been that in every kind of game that's felt big, we've not really turned up. And I think that's, you know, really lacking that kind of, like, you know, one of those games where, you know, it's exciting from start to finish and it's tense. And, you know, we got that a bit with the Ipswich game, and that probably was our first game in 3 years that, you know, was a big occasion and we didn't just fail to turn up to the party. And hopefully that will give them some confidence that, you know, say West Brom aren't Real Madrid, neither are Ipswich, but they're probably a little slightly closer in terms of the way that they're playing than perhaps West Brom are. So I think we've got to have a bit of confidence. We've got to have a bit of that fighting spirit that they have shown in recent games, and try and convert that into a bit of sort of, I guess, front foot pressure rather than necessarily setting up to be, I guess, dominated throughout the game. We've got to win. I think we can win. I just hope that, I hope they turn up.
I think we will win.
Yeah, we will win, obviously. Yeah, it'll be fine.
Oh, sorry, yes, 5-0. I'd forgotten. Yeah. it's an excellent point, actually. And one thing I had kind of forgotten about the Wagner tenure, that every time there's been a bit of hope, we've just absolutely soiled ourselves. Like, even going back to his third game in charge after we beat Preston and Coventry and thought, God, these guys are back. Yep, playoffs, here we come. I think we might have even been in the playoffs at this point. And then got absolutely obliterated by Burnley. I can't remember anything about that game other than Tim Krul just passing it to Burnley, literally just giving it to him and going, there you go, mate. And then the same against Sunderland, I think, where we were off the back of that win at Millwall.
The Millwall game, yeah, when it felt like something might be happening and then...
Yeah, felt like we were back and we really weren't. So, yeah, they will have truly turned a corner, I think. Well, they will have turned a bit of a corner. They'll have turned 45 degrees if they can get a win in this one. So, yeah, it does feel big. So, and if just you're going to that one, look forward to that.
Get people thinking about what's happening on the pitch rather than being distracted by football governance, which I'm sure it's never been this interesting to anybody until Norwich fans now, who are now sort of suddenly obsessed with the ins and outs of the day-to-day running of the club. Like, we should not be thinking about that. We should not be preoccupied by that. And I understand why people are thinking about it, but if we just had something to take our minds off that during 90 minutes at Carrow Road, I think it would probably help everybody settle down a little bit.
Yep. Would not want to be one of those podcasts that spent 10 minutes discussing a can being chucked at a car. Concentrate on what's going on the pitch, guys. Come on. None of this extraneous nonsense. I think that's probably pretty much covered what we're expecting through in the cup. 5-0 win over West Brom. And then Elland Road and Anfield in the space of 4 days. Okay. I assume you're going. Are you going to Elland Road, Zoe? Was that your
currently to be decided, but it is my match pick as an away member.
So say, I
it's 36 quid.
So what, for the coach?
For the ticket.
That only gets you 2/3 of the way to Bristol. 36 quid. You should feel grateful. Andy, did you have a match pick from this season? Do you worry about such things being in the media?
No, I'm often working, so it's hard to. The Liverpool game would be on ITV though.
That's true.
If it is to be that, so Liverpool against Norwich would be on ITV. So from a selfish point of view, it would be good from that respect. But how many people are going to be tuning into that? I don't know.
Is that a guaranteed trip to Anfield for you then?
It's possible. It's a possibility. Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, but we'll wait and see. I'm sceptical about whether that will happen or not. I think Bristol Rovers will probably win, but we'll see.
Well, if you're listening from the ITV editorial team or production team or whoever you are, let Andy go. You know, have you never been to Anfield before?
I've never been to Anfield. No.
There you go.
I mean, it's an incredible stadium, but that soon sort of wears off when you're 5-0 down.
No. You're fine. You've made a pitch. Don't spoil it now. It'll be the best day of your life, and we're going to win. Yeah, that's the narrative we're going with. Have we got Kenny Other Business? This is where we would normally look to the comments, but they are empty as we're not doing this live. So, in which case, I have no Kenny Other Business either. No, so, that is all for today's On the Ball, the Norwich City podcast that hopes we've left you all happier than Liam Rossini was on Friday night. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. It's free on your usual player. Just search On the Ball Norwich City on your preferred social platform. Ratings and reviews wherever prompted are always hugely appreciated. And if you want to get in touch with any questions, send me a direct message on Twitter at NCFC Numbers. I'm very slow at replying, but I do try. A huge thank you to our two guests tonight. What a way to kick off 2024 for the podcast. Andy, great to have you back on. And fingers crossed that you make it to Liverpool.
Yeah, let's hope so. Yeah, thanks, Andy, Steve. Thank you.
No, pleasure. And a pleasure as always as well, Zoe. Thank you for coming on, and see you on Saturday, I guess.
Yeah, see you Saturday. You've now convinced me that we're going to finish at least third, so I feel like it was the experience I needed.
Yeah, I mean, am I now the positive one? Okay. I mean, you might want to work on that, because I don't really feel like I am. And I will have completely flipped next week's pod if we've lost twice in a week. So I think I'm just the fickle one. That's all I am. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back in just a week's time. Imagine that. Not long to wait at all. Until then, never mind the danger.